We are joined now by Kevin Kumashiro, who is the former dean at the University of San Francisco School of Education and author of several books, including Teaching Toward Democracy. And thank you for being with us, Kevin.
Thanks for having me.
I wonder if we could start by having you just talk about what it was that Trump was saying when he attacked American history teaching, and particularly the teachings of Howard Zinn in schools a couple of weeks ago now.
Yeah, well, on Constitution Day, the White House had a history conference at the U.S. Archives, and you know, that actually began with Vice President Pence talking about how in schools, there are some who are trying to erase parts of U.S. history. And then Trump, President Trump goes up afterwards and says, well, who's leading a lot of this erasure of history? It's actually the kind of left-wing propaganda. And he names Howard Zinn, author of People's History of the United States, as one of the leading proponents of this kind of so-called toxic indoctrination or child abuse. And the argument was really that, you know, when we teach about systemic racism and the legacies of racism and colonialism in this country, we're teaching students lies, we're teaching students to hate the United States, we're being very divisive. And so he actually calls it both propaganda, he calls it divisive, and he calls it un-American. And he also, at the same time, is saying that we need to be teaching a pro-American curriculum. And by that, you know, he even signals, so another curriculum that he criticized is the New York Times' project called 1619. And, you know, that's all about teaching about sort of the legacies of enslavement, of history, and how that continues till today. And, you know, in his critique of the 1619 project, he then offers a counter, and he says, well, there's this much better curriculum produced by a bunch of conservatives in response to the 1619 curriculum called the 1776 Unites curriculum, which aims to present African Americans in a far more positive light. It aims to kind of shine the spotlight away from systems and legacies of racism. And so it's this two-part argument, right, that A, we need to be teaching people to love America and see how great it is, and B, the way we do that is not by shining the spotlight on long histories of colonialism and racism.
Well, and the irony, of course, is that when you talk about the erasure of history, the kind of traditional American history, the history that I learned going to a public school in the U.S. with the traditional Thanksgiving of the pilgrims saving the Native Americans and all of the really misinformation that we were taught, there's a lot that's left out. And I wonder if you can talk about that and what the 1619 curricula and Howard Zinn's teaching bring back into history that's been erased.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like that's the biggest irony of claims by people like Trump and Pence, which is that the traditional curriculum is itself incredibly partial and exclusive. And in fact, what I think many would argue, many who study education and curriculum, would argue that curriculum is always partial. It's always going to include only certain stories, only certain perspectives, only certain experiences. And underlying that inclusion, it tells only a certain story about whatever topic it is you're talking about. In this case, who or what is America? And so we could give many examples, right? Exactly the ones that you pointed to, of where we're telling a particular sort of sanitized, whitewashed version of our history, of our kind of political systems, of our cultures, and so on. And what a lot of people, like Howard Zinn's book, like the 1619 Project, like including the multicultural curriculum from the civil rights era, the ethnic studies struggles that are happening across the country right now to get into schools, right? All of these curriculums are about saying, when we teach, we need to actually not be perpetuating these kind of whitewashed lies that we've been telling ourselves for really centuries about who we are as a country, that we need to actually be grappling with how who we are is shaped and has long been shaped by all of these different forces, including enslavement, including genocide and stealing of land, right, of Native peoples, and sort of Jim Crow laws, segregation. I mean, the list goes on and on. And that's not just all about the negative either. I mean, people say, well, isn't that inflammatory? Isn't that upsetting? Yes, of course it's very upsetting to learn about those things. But what we also learn when we study about the legacies of imperialism, colonialism, racism, as well as, you know, sexism and heterosexism and classism, when we study these things, we also study the flip side, which is that we know that progress, we make progress, we know that these ideologies and systems get grappled with and changed over time because there's resistance. And so part of what we also want to study is what does it mean to strengthen democracy when we tackle head-on these systems. And I think that is part of the 1619 curriculum. That is part of Howard Zinn's book. That is part of multicultural education, is to see that actually democracy is not strengthened when we ignore the important aspects of our history. It's actually strengthened when we acknowledge, when we grapple with, and when we intentionally try to heal from those histories.
To that end, you and other scholars have put together a statement, Educating for Democracy Demands Educating Against White Supremacy. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, this statement, which is just getting released right now, in half a day, we already have about 700 educators from across the country who have signed on. And I imagine in the coming days, that number will massively grow. And really, this statement was written right after a number of us learned about the comments by people like President Trump, Vice President Pence, and by the way, so too, right before that history conference at the archives on Constitution Day, right before that, Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos was at a separate conference making similar comments about the problems of the 1619 curriculum and how the 1776 curriculum is much better. And so it's a number of people, right, echoing these stories. And so a number of educators came together and said, we actually need to push back on this dominant narrative that teaching about racism is teaching lies and teaching people to hate the country. It's what we need to do is insist that our job is actually to teach towards democracy, and the only way that you can teach towards democracy is by teaching truth. And that means we grapple with the uncomfortable, unpleasant, but endemic aspects of our country and how we got here. And secondly, what we try to argue in that piece is that, you know, not only is that kind of much more honest history and much more honest curriculum a central part of education, we also try to acknowledge how a race-conscious curriculum actually benefits student learning. We try to acknowledge that when we whitewash history, that is also instructive. I mean, what we try to emphasize is that not talking about racism doesn't mean the curriculum is somehow race neutral. That when you're not talking about racism, you're actually still telling stories implicitly about the normalcy of whiteness, for example. And so part of what our statement is also trying to do is get people to think in much more complex ways about what is curriculum, what does it mean to teach both directly and indirectly, what does it mean about the stories we're telling about the United States regarding whiteness or regarding resistance, protest, and struggle, and then what does it mean to actually build a stronger democracy, and what role do we all play in asking these kinds of uncomfortable questions? I think that's what that statement is trying to get at. I think that's why, you know, hundreds of educators have signed on so quickly, and I'm hoping that this helps us to pick up some momentum in this moment. You know, I don't think it's surprising that Trump and these other leaders in this moment are talking about curriculum and are trying to push back against acknowledging racism, because this is a moment when, unlike any other time we've seen, there's racial uprisings and racial reckoning happening throughout this country and around the world around anti-black racism, around white supremacy, and so on. This is, I think, one way that some are trying to push back on that protest, and we want to say this is a moment for us to join in that reckoning and to insist that this is a role that education should be playing.
Is this the first such statement that's being put out by educators across the country on this issue?
2.5 weeks ago, the White House issued a directive that said that federal funding should not be used to support any kinds of training for federal employees on certain topics that is divisive, that promotes un-American ideology, that is propaganda. A lot of the same critiques of school curriculum was actually lodged several weeks ago against professional development training at the federal level. And you know, they called out trainings about critical race theory, about white privilege, about things like that. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because in response to that, there were actually some groups of educators who were speaking up and saying, this is a problem. Like, you know, the way you encounter, you challenge racism isn't by ignoring it. It's actually by naming it and sort of trying to figure out how we counter it. So there's a pattern that we're seeing in the administration to use this kind of rhetoric and to push back on different levels that at which education happens. And there's also a pattern of educators trying to mobilize to speak up. It's definitely not the first time that we see large groups of educators pushing back on either problematic rhetoric or problematic reform initiatives that are underway. But this one might be one of the bigger mobilizings that we're seeing happening by educators.
And I just wanted to ask, just so our audience who maybe don't quite understand this can get what you're saying when your statement says that schools are already teaching about race and normalizing whiteness. We just don't realize that we're doing so. How does the curriculum that we have now in public schools and this 1776 Unites curriculum perpetuate whiteness and white supremacy?
So with so many topics, I think we can think about a central question we should be asking as we think about any set of curriculum is what is both explicitly said in the curriculum and what is implicitly said, what is implied by the curriculum. And so let's take something like, since we're talking about history, let me take for a moment a slightly different topic. Think about something like literature. So one thing we might ask is, whose literature are we reading? Like, who are the authors? What kinds of stories are they telling us? And you know, what when we put that all together, what does it tell us about whose voices matter, and you know, what it means to learn literature? What is good quality literature? So on and so forth. And a lot of U.S. literature, English literature that we study is often by white authors talking about Americanness in particular ways, such as stories that don't have characters of color or where the characters of color are very marginal. And I think that's why for decades there's been a push not only for multicultural literature, which is literature about different cultures, but also critical analysis of literature. In other words, the ways that the kinds of questions we ask about the literature is sometimes asking us to look for stories or messages about race that are both explicit and implicit. You know, one of my favorite books to illustrate this, by the way, is by the wonderful late Toni Morrison, who wrote a book called Playing in the Dark. And in her book, Playing in the Dark, she talks about some of the canonical texts, some of the main pieces of fiction in U.S. literature. And what she argues is that in some of these texts that don't even have black characters, or characters of color, of any color. What she argues is that there's still blackness in the text. There's this thing that she calls the black shadow, a kind of an unspoken presence about race that is against which Americanness is defined or whiteness is defined. So that's a perfect example, I think, of how, you know, we don't even have to talk about race for race to constantly be coming up. And I think in history, this is another great subject for us to look at, like whose experiences are we talking about? A lot of history textbooks kind of communicate this idea that Western civilization shows us what it means to progress. It is the pinnacle of cultural achievement. It is the exemplar of kind of democracy and so on and so forth, and that the U.S. builds on that legacy. And that is one way to think about the development of and the formation of the United States. But I think what Zinn argues is that there's all kinds of forces that was shaping the United States, and not only were some of those forces equally powerful and equally positive, it's also the case that Western civilization didn't give us only good things. It gave us some problematic things as well. So I think those are some ways in which we can think about how explicitly and implicitly race is coming up all the time. Our job isn't to simply learn facts. Our job is to ask, what are the underlying messages or narratives or stories that our curriculum tells us that we might not always be recognizing is being taught?
And of course, when you are learning facts, which facts are you learning and which facts are left out?
Exactly, right? So it's such a, I mean, I also remember, right, being in a U.S. history class where we never talked about, for example, the Japanese-American internment. And I grew up in Hawaii, and I'm Japanese-American, surrounded by all these Japanese-Americans, but it's not something that we really talked about. And yet, what a pivotal aspect of the U.S. domestic response to war, right, that actually has shaped how we think about citizenship, how we think about the definitions of kind of, you know, what necessitates different kind of extra legal action. I mean, you know, it raises so many fundamental questions about governance, about race, about justice. And so it's not just an example of something we did that was problematic. It's an example of something that helps us understand the much larger forces at work. What facts get taught, what facts don't, and what does, you know, who makes those decisions, and what does that exclusion tell us about, you know, what some people think is important. I think those kind of meta questions are what are some of the most exciting questions to be asking about curriculum.
Well, thank you so much. And if people are interested in it, either finding out more, or if they are an academic, signing on to this statement that you and other educators have put together, is your website the best place to go for that?
It is. Yes, thanks for asking. So they can go to my website, kevinkumashiro.com, and really it's, anyone can go to see the statement, which will probably go into the media within the next few days, but any educator, early childhood, K-12, and higher education is welcome to join this large network that's being formed that wants to speak out about what it means to advance justice through schools.
Well, thank you so much. Again, that website is kevinkumashiro.com. That link we'll also put on the KBOO website with this piece at kboo.fm. Thank you, Kevin, for joining us on KBOO today.
Thanks so much for having me.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.